This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. My next guest came into the public eye a couple of years ago when he published an open letter about education and the condition of schools in his home state of Texas. The letter became known as the New Alamo Letter because he wrote it in the style of William Barrett Travis, who sent a note from the Alamo right before it fell in 1836. In it, he talked about how public school funding was being cut by Texas Governor Rick Perry and the legislature there, how children's lunch money was being taken in order to keep taxes low for big businesses, and how an accountability-related bureaucracy and a cannonade of gross underfunding for 10 years at least have forced education to lose several good men and women. Now John Kuhn has expanded on that letter and the ideas in it and some speeches that he has given in a new book called Fear and Learning in America, Bad Data, Good Teachers, and the Attack on Public Education. John, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks for having me.
So you have been in the education field for quite a while. What's changed?
Well, from the time that I came into education in 1997 to today, the intensity of the accountability regime has increased dramatically. The centrality of the standardized tests has increased dramatically. The trust in teachers has decreased dramatically. And the role of outsiders, particularly billionaires and foundations that they fund, has really taken over and the decision-making about what we do and how we take care of our kids.
You also talk in the book about the rising inequality among our children. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, of course, there's a general social inequality that we face, and it makes teaching more difficult in areas where children are denied some of the things that middle class and wealthier Americans take for granted. Compounding that and really indefensibly, like morally indefensibly, is the fact that our schools are often funded inequitably as well. So school funding in way too many cases is dependent upon local property values. If you live in a wealthy area, you can tax at a lower rate and generate more school funding. And so, for example, in my state of Texas, if you live in a wealthy area, you have students who come to school ready to learn more often, and yet you have more money to educate those easier-to-educate children than if you were to live in a poorer area, and you're given less money to educate kids who need it more.
You think we need a better way than property taxes?
There has to be a better way than the use of property taxes locally, and I don't know if that's through a statewide property tax or if it's through an income tax. In Texas, we don't have a state income tax, and actually our Constitution forbids having one. But there has to be some sort of mechanism that divorces property value from local school funding. As long as those two things are attached, then wealthier areas will have easier access to funding for their schools.
Yesterday on the show, I talked to an elementary school teacher in Florida. She works with gifted kids. She is fed up with the amount of testing and seminars that she is being forced to attend after being in the business for a number of years. Last weekend, I talked to a kindergarten teacher in Massachusetts who resigned because it became more about testing and data than about her relationship with and the education of the children in her classrooms. Are you seeing similar effects to the morale of the teachers in your school in the Parrott-Witt School District?
Oh, absolutely. In my school and surrounding schools, fellow superintendents I spend time with, I would say it's almost a universal feeling among educators that testing is overemphasized, and then it's also misused. You know, we know how to test. We're educators, and we see this testing regime being used statistically invalid ways and in politically motivated ways. So there's a great deal of grassroots opposition to what's going on. Teachers are generally very quiet about it because our jobs are not as secure to allow us to really speak out. But the other thing that's happening right now, too, is parents have begun to see through kind of the rhetoric behind testing that has said, oh, these tests are just to guarantee that your kids will have a quality education. They're starting to kind of peel back the layers of the onion, and so there's an opt-out movement nationwide now where parents are saying, you know what, I'm not going to feed my children to this machine. I'm not going to let you weaponize my child's data to use against public schooling, because that's what's being done.
And you've got good teachers, like those two women I just mentioned who have been on this show, who are falling prey to the morale damage that's going on there. And people who are beloved in their communities as good teachers are saying, you know what, I don't need this.
Yeah, it's absolutely happening. Just like I said in the Alamo letter, we've lost many good men and women because education is being perverted from what they thought it was when they went into it, which was a kind of a humanitarian ideal, and now it's been turned into something completely different where the technocracy has totally taken over and the humanity has been just kind of divorced from what we're doing. A lot of people can't and won't operate in a system like that.
What do you think of the so-called education entrepreneurs, people who have gotten into it as a business, and charter schools and companies that are taking over local school districts around the country who are thinking, you know what, here's where we can really make some money?
Yeah, I think there's an interesting dichotomy there. I'm not opposed to all technology. I think technology can help us educate kids in certain ways. But I think within that realm of educational entrepreneurialism, there is a tremendous temptation to rush products to market that are not only not beneficial but are actually counterproductive to the aims of public education. I think there are a lot of scams. When you look at the charter school sector, you find real estate scams. For example, I'll pick on virtual education. You know, I've looked at virtual classes that have been offered, and a lot of times what they amount to are worksheets that are placed online that, you know, they are automatically graded, and that's the big innovation, you know, that constitutes virtual education. Kids are not getting feedback from a real-life human being. And so I think there are a lot of things being put out there on the market saying, oh, this is the new thing, this will fix everything, and they're sold like a panacea or a magic bullet, when in reality they're just a product that's been put out there for profit. So sometimes kids are kind of collateral damage.
I want to go back to the testing for just a moment. What do you say to the people who say, look, public education was in crisis, and we had to figure out a way to fix our schools, and the way we do that is by finding out what's going on in our schools, and in order to do that, we needed more information? Did you not have enough information in your school district before, John?
No, that argument is false on a few levels. Number one, I'm a little suspicious of the crisis claim when we still have 95% of our families choosing public schools for their children. Way back in 1983, when A Nation at Risk came out, people were, when given polls, and this continues to this day, given surveys about public schools, they'll say, my personal public school is great. I give it an A or a B. You know, 70-80% of people will respond that way. But when asked about all those other public schools out there, they'll say, oh, yeah, those are terrible. And so a lot of the crisis mentality has come from an advertising campaign that's been really, really relentless for the past 30 years.
Yep.
So, yes, people believe there's a crisis, but teachers can also give and grade tests and provide feedback about how students are doing. The question is, do we trust teachers or not? You know, do we trust teachers more than we trust the politicians?
It seems to me like this has been mostly, well, I think there may have actually been good intentions in some places to say, you know what, we can tweak things, we can make things better. And who doesn't? I'm sure it's a superintendent. You have said, how can I make things better in my school district? But the effect of it is, in too many cases, it has made teachers scapegoats.
Absolutely. And I do agree with your point. There are some good intentions in place. In my book, I distinguish between what I call white hat reformers and black hat reformers. And the white hat reformers are people who have seen schools where students were not getting what they needed and who have said, we have to do something. But then the black hat reformers are in that movement as well, and unfortunately they seem to be driving the movement towards a more profit-based purpose than a child-based purpose.
So who's funding that?
Oh, my goodness. The Gates Foundation, the Walton Foundation, the Broad Foundation, the Dell Foundation, Zuckerberg, almost every billionaire you can name is involved. Reed Hastings from Netflix has recently spoken out. I believe he spoke out about the need to get rid of elected school boards. And it baffles me that the average American can listen to a billionaire say we should get rid of local democracy and just listen to billionaires, and people aren't astounded and frightened. I mean, it honestly frightens me when I hear how all of these billionaires are peddling the same consistent message that we should get rid of a public service that 90% of Americans depend on for their children and replace it with something where there's no representation and where we just listen to orders from some central authority that gets lots and lots of donations from these same people who are peddling the crisis message. To me, it's frightening.
Well, the rising inequality in the schools and the scapegoating of teachers are two big problems here, neither of which are going to solve whatever problems there are in schools. No one would ever argue that American schools at any level are perfect. They could always be improved. That's why we have people like you in those positions. But the way it's been done and this so-called reform movement of the last few years, I think has been destructive. It's a terrific book, Fear and Learning in America. John Kuhn, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend. America Weekend.